was really fast. We didn't get a chance to welcome the out-of-towner who tried to. Hi.
How you doing?
Where are you from?
Gloucester, Virginia.
Michael Dean. Well, my name's Jack Scott, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jack.
And I'm happy to be here with a good bunch of people in AA tonight. I think I'm among friends. I'm pretty nervous about doing this kind of thing. This is not my cup of tea, but but I'm kind of on a AA buzz, if you will, this tonight. This has been quite an AA week for me, if you will. I've been around the program for a while. My sobriety date is July 1st, 1982. I have a home group, and some of the home group members are here. It's the Indian River Study in Virginia Beach. We meet on Monday nights, and we study the big book and the 12 and 12 alternately. And I have a sponsor, and a sponsor, a couple of fellas, and so I'm kind of engaged with the program. But something new's kind of happened to me, or renewed, if you will, this week, and that is, and some of y'all have had this experience, and that is I've gotten re-engaged with intergroup activities and things where the central office is, and they had an opening, and I followed up on the opening as just an interested member wanting to pitch in, and the next thing I know, I got a key to the office and a passcode and a Zoom address and all this, that, and the other. So I went to my first intergroup meeting in 10 years Tuesday night, and then last night I had a first committee meeting, and I'm referring to cooperation with the professional community is the new thing I've taken on. So I'm real kind of energized by it. I had a good, met with four other good people last night, and one of my mentors is here in the room, past chair that's I'm going to lean on, and there's others, and there's just this good network of people, and it's and I'll talk maybe a little bit about what that's meant to me, but in the past, but supposed to qualify a little bit, and let's say this, one thing about, so CPC is about dealing with professionals and things like that, so I have a doctor tale, if you will. It's real very short, but so a doctor makes the comment. He says, "Sir, I'm going to have to ask you to stop drinking." And the patient looks at him kind of quizzically and says, "Is there anything wrong?" And the doctor says, "I'm trying to examine you." So if you know that kind of drinking, if you might be that patient guy, then you know we're in the right place. I can relate to that kind of. Another one, if you will, is there's this, how's this go? So this guy's driving down the road, and he gets pulled over by the police, and the policeman walks up to him and looks in the car, asks for his license and things like that, and as he's looking inside the car, he startles and pulls back and puts his hand on his gun. And what he is seeing in the back seat, this guy has a sword and a battle axe and some other large kind of medieval implement of destruction, if you will, three things. And the cop says, "What's all that about?" And the guy says, take it easy. I'm a juggler. This is part of my juggling act. And the policeman, he thinks maybe he's got a murder or something on his hands. He says, "You're going to have to prove it to me. You get out here and show me that you can juggle those things." And so the guy says, "No problem." So he gets out of the car, goes, gets his battle axe, his big sword, and his other big, huge implement, and he starts juggling them on the side of the highway in front of the cop. And about that time, sorry.
Sorry about that.
Hopefully that's the think one, right? I'm sorry.
No, don't worry.
So the guy's juggling. Okay. And about that time, down the other lane of the highway is a AA sponsor and his sponsee, and the sponsee sitting and watching this as they drive by, and he says, "Damn, those sobriety checks have really gotten tough." And you know, that both of those kind of got relevance to me. I mean, the thing about the patient, I've been in situations where I shouldn't have been drinking and I was, you know, couldn't stop. And the thing about, you know, in some ways I got out just in the nick of time before they started doing sobriety checks with razor sharp implements and things like that. You know, I got out of drinking and other things before certain levels of testing and stuff like that. But then again, I didn't get out. I got in my fair share of trouble and stuff like that. So just to let you know a little bit about my drinking background and stuff like that. I come from a family that's got alcoholism pretty all through it. The four generations that I know of have all got it. I grew up in a household where you saw alcoholism, the good and the bad. My parents both, by their own admission, wound up in this fellowship. I was 15 when my mom got in, and I was 20 when my dad got in. So, but I grew up in an alcoholic home where they were both drinking alcoholically. Their style, though, was very neat. And my dad was a tuxedo cotillion kind of guy, a ballroom dancer, and all this, that, and the other. And he drank his drinks fancy and stuff like that. In the early days. And so I saw the good side of drinking. And when I was pretty young, they kind of hung with other, I'm a baby boomer generation, obviously. And, there was a lot of kids in the neighborhood, and there was a lot of parents getting together, and there was always drinking involved, and it was all pretty jovial. And I saw a lot of good stuff, kind of back part of it back then. But by the time I was, starting to be a teenager and things like that, they're drinking. Complexion had totally changed. It turned into a pretty good case study for the two people. They were as different as night and day as far as their style of drinking was concerned. My dad was a drunk that would, he'd come home every year. He was a functional drunk. He worked. He never missed a day's work. He was a professional guy and did fine. But he'd come home, drink four fingers of Crab Orchard as soon as he got in the house, and he kept drinking all night, and by the end of the night he couldn't hit the door over there. He'd be bouncing off the walls back and forth, very visible, very obvious, and then pass out somewhere in the house. And very apparent, you know, the way he looked drinking. My mother, on the other hand, you hardly ever saw her drink, and she never was that outwardly kind of staggering or anything like that, but she was mean. Emotionally mean, kind of spike, just and I saw that change, and I didn't know what that was. You know, I didn't know it was alcoholism and that kind of thing. So I wound up. One thing, you know, I told you I was on kind of an AA buzz, if you will, this week. But something really brought me back to earth this morning, and that was I attend a big book study Zoom meeting on Friday mornings, and this morning we were reading the story out of the back of the book. It's called Safe Haven. And it's about a guy. He was writing his story from prison. And it's a bit of how he got there. And his story and my story are very similar. And that was, he was a teenage juvenile delinquent. And I am. There's a line in the book about self-will run riot, selfishness and self-centeredness. That's our nature and things of that nature. And I was that kind of kid, and this is really with very little or no influence of any kind of alcohol or anything like that. I was just, from about the time I was 12 or something like that, until I was 16, it was, if I saw it, I took it. It began with stealing money out of parents' wallets and things like that, then taking their car out for joy rides and that sort of thing, and then I ran into some other guys that, I never did join the sports team at school. I never did join the chess club. I ran with the guys that were partying and starting to drink, and I love to drive. I still love to drive today. So I started driving when I was 13, and I didn't have a car. And back then, most all the GM cars, and lots of people just left their keys in their car. But anyway, cars were easy to get hold of back then, let's just say. And it was, easy to just go and find a car. And I was a fairly, I wasn't a malicious person, or I'm not a mean-spirited person, so I would very often, you know, take the car, ride it around all night long, put it back in the driveway, leave the keys in it, just, you know, no harm, no foul. And then I ran with some guys, and we were all doing that sort of thing. And I'm a kind of a B fella. I'm a wingman. I'm not an initiator. I'm not a planner, really, but I'm a good guy to have on your right-hand side. So anyway, these guys were, they were doing different things, it got progressively worse. But anyway, long story short, by the time I was 15, I was in jail for, I'd been on parole for about 2 years for shoplifting and a couple other smaller things, and then I got busted twice for the stealing the car stuff and wound up in juvenile jail. And those other guys, we were all, this whole gang that I was running with, we all kind of wound up getting busted all at the same time. So we're all in there in jail together. And this is when my mother got sober. I was 15 years old. I'm her bottom, so to speak. And she got kind of got on the track. And here's a pretty interesting thing, I think. I'm sitting here telling you that today I'm kind of a interested in doing this cooperation with the professional community. And one of the reasons is I'm a 15-year-old felon, two-time felon in jail, and my mother comes down there and visits me, and it breaks her heart, or did something to her inside. And she went and talked to the city minister, the city minister was down there or something. I don't know how they exactly got hooked up, but long story short, he told her, he says, I don't know much about what's going on with you, but I know people in this organ, in the city here. There's a woman that I can get you connected with. That maybe can give you some help. And the city minister got my mother hooked up with this woman named Margaret. And Margaret was worked in city offices, and she was a recovering alcoholic. And it took for her. And this was in 1968. This was the year that Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy were killed. I was in jail when Robert Kennedy was assassinated. So to give you a time frame. So, but that's the kind of, that. And my mother got sober and stayed sober. And wound up having an impact on our whole family. We're one drunk, and you know, the ripple effect of one drunk, my mother's that kind of person, had that kind of effect on our family. My father came along behind her about 5 years later. But anyway, so in part because she was starting to get straightened up and things like that, and I had served 3 months in jail, I wound up getting released. These other guys that I was running with wound up going on to greater jail, if you will. They went to state institutions and stuff like that and stayed a little longer. And then that, so I kind of learned my lesson. And there's a, I think there's something to, you know, everything happens for a reason sort of analogy, or, you know, that kind of thinking. I hate dark hours. I hate bad experience, valley experiences and things like that. That was certainly one of my valley experiences. I can tell you, after about 30 days of sleep, and I got in trouble in jail, and I was in solitary confinement for about a month. And for me personally, after about 30 days, the romance and the excitement and everything, and all the good connotations of being in jail with your buddies started wearing off for me. And I began to get a sense that this wasn't for me, you know, that I didn't like being locked up. And that turned out to be, not everybody's like that. Turns out in my AA experience, I wound up going into jails and sharing meetings and stuff like that. And I've run into guys that really don't care two cents about their freedom. You know, most of their running buddies are inside anyway, and it's just it's just another thing. As facing 8 years, I'm looking at you, a guy that's facing 8 years and just said it's another thing. And I'm thinking, all the sunsets you're going to miss, all the mountaintops you're going to miss, and all this, that, and other. And so, you know, freedom, I appreciated freedom then at 15 years old. And so when I got released, I quit the stealing and the stuff like that. I cut that out. And this was the 60s era. There was a lot of stuff going on, hippies and all that kind of thing. And I was into all the social stuff. And once again, I was never in the chess club, and I was never on the football team and all this kind of thing. So I was into all the fun stuff, if you will. And I kind of half got through high school, just barely. I had to finish at night. And I was dating a girl last couple of years of high school. She was my sweetheart. And when I got to the end of school, it was getting a job was the thing that was going to be a kind of a settler for me, and get married. And you know, and what I realized, you know, in AA lenses these days, were these were things that I was going to do. I knew I was kind of on the edge. You know, I've had the trouble as a kid, so now I'm doing more and more drinking, but pretty having fun. I'll tell you this about drinking and stuff for me. I'm not a guy that alcohol ran all over me from the first minute, and I hated every minute of it. And it, you know, just lucky. I loved alcohol for several years. I had great times, 1,000 times over. So it did everything for me. We come here into AA. This is my observation. I come into AA for what alcohol was doing to me, and the consequences I was having, the trouble it was causing me, and stuff like that. It took me a while here in AA to learn that what got me to that place was what alcohol was did for me for so long. And alcohol does a lot for me. And I think it does a lot. Part of the alcoholism problem is, for me, as I feel about it, is that one of the troubles I'm going to have, the reason, you know, one of the things I got to be careful about as far as going back out and that sort of thing is romancing the idea of what it would do for me again. I still think of it in terms of what it would do for me. And it will, you know. There's just nothing better than a couple of stiff drinks and hitting the golf ball or throwing a strike or stuff. I can perform under two drinks really well. But I usually wind up at about 24 to 48 drinks, you know. For the longest time, it was kind of a matter of control. It's all about control. When I drank, in the good times, when I drank, I felt like I had my hands on the levers and I was controlling everything, and it was the best. And as time goes on, y'all read more about alcoholism tonight, and one of the comments in there is this is a progressive problem, and you know, with progression, that is an aspect of alcoholism, and over time, yeah, lack of control was was the thing I noticed at the end. But there was a process of getting there, and for me, it was about a 10-year process. I'd been raising Cain. I'd had the trouble with the law when I was a juvenile. By the time I got out of school, I was partying regularly. And doing other things that hippies do and stuff like that, I wasn't much of a hippie really. I never went to Haight-Ashbury or anything like that, but I had a little bit of long hair, and you know, fancied myself a hippie. How about that? So getting married was part of that settling down. And what I was getting ready to say a minute ago is these were efforts to make my life more manageable, to stay between the 40 and the 60, to not crash and burn. And I saw that as a tool, if you will, so that marriage would, you know, settle me and that sort of thing. So I married this high school sweetheart. And there's kind of a part to that that's important as far as AA is concerned, is run up to that, getting that married. I mean, like right in the last couple of days, all the plans for a church wedding and all the things that go with getting married for the first time young were taking place, and about 48 hours out, I had this epiphany, if you will, this moment where I thought, oh my gosh, you know, this is probably just not a good idea. I'm not ready for this. You know, this just really something. The wee small voice just kind of hit me and said, this probably isn't good. So the wee small voice came out of my mouth, and with my wife to be, I said, you know, I don't know if it's a real good idea. And whatever else I might say, and she went into the, oh my gosh, you know, the boo-hoos, as you might guess, and somebody getting cold feet or whatever like that, and I turned and buckled just like this, just that quick. I said, oh honey, don't do that, we'll go through with this, and so on. And I say all that because, compared to what AA's given me today. And you know, and AA gives me some tools, if you will, some other things to complement, to support those moments when you have an instinct or a moment of clarity or something like that, or you're making an important decision, whatever it may be. If I had an intuitive thought like that and it really struck me pretty hard, I would have a sponsor to go to. I would have literature to read. I would have the experience, strength, and hope of many people that I've heard talk about similar subjects probably before me. I have a network of subject matter experts, so to speak, that I could talk to. There's just a number. I had prayer. I'd have a good number of things that I could go and lean on to try and come to a better conclusion rather than just whimsical, if you will. So I appreciate AA for those kind of practical tools, if you will, that have really helped me navigate some relationships and decisions and business and things like that. I did get married, and we had a child, and my drinking and stuff was carrying on. I got into a bar scene during my younger 20s and things like that, and that became more and more important to me. I took my marriage for granted. The marriage lasted 2 years, and there was a son in the middle. When the son was 1 year old, my wife had enough of me not being around and acting more and more like a drunkard and not paying attention to her, and she went looking for her own entertainment elsewhere. And that happened to be with some of my other people that I knew, and it was a betrayal as far as I was concerned. It broke up our marriage, and I was really blindsided by it and hurt. And anyway, so she went her way, I went mine. I didn't have much to do with that boy for 10 years while I was drinking and partying. And that bothered me a lot. One day a week, my conscience night was Sunday night, laying down on Sunday night at the end of the week, trying to, and that's when things would hit me of what I wasn't doing, my guilt night, if you will. But the other times I was partying, carrying on, I was just kind of blowing all, it was no time for reflection or anything like that. But so that was just like the one consequence that divorce, if you will. And you know, so I'm sitting at home and I am really, you know, I truly am just blindsided, hurt, emotional. I don't have words for this. Here's something that AA's given me is a vocabulary. And one word that I didn't have in my vocabulary, I know what it's in the dictionary somewhere, but I never used it, never thought it applied to myself, stuff like that. That's the word resentment. It's just not a word that I used or anything like that. But I had one. I had a huge one. My best buddy took off with my wife. That's the chemistry for resentment. So when you're sitting there by yourself in the house and you're thinking about this, and you got a bar a couple blocks away, you know, a lot of nights you just say, the heck with this, I'm going down to the bar. So things got accelerated, ratcheted up, if you will, my drinking. And I'm kind of enjoying it, stuff like that. The divorce, I was kind of, well, I blamed, you know, her for a good part of that. I'll tell you that once I got to AA and looked at my part of things, stuff like that, I know, you know, I abandoned her emotionally and physically. You know, she had no other choice. So, but that's AA showing me that. So a couple of years after, a year or so after that breakup, I get a DUI. That was kind of inevitable, and I have to go to DUI school. I think I'm 24 at that time, and I go through 12 weeks of classes, and in the first half of it, they teach you how to drive and drink, in other words, how to drink responsibly and not get up to levels and things like that. In the second half of it, they start teaching about problem drinking and things like that, and how to some of the things of that medical in nature, and how if you can't keep it, stuff, signs and symptoms of alcoholism, stuff like that. And I can remember the night real well. I said, we don't need to talk about that. Well, let's talk about that driving stuff some more. That's good stuff. You know, we don't need to talk about this alcoholism business and things like that. Well, lo and behold, I wound up in AA a few years later, and I can tell you there's nobody else in that class who was there. Nobody else said anything about, let's don't talk about alcoholism but me. And I seemed to be the one that was affected by it. And then there was the gal that was running it probably had a bit of a clue about me, because she asked me one time if I would care to get, got into the class, if I would care to hear more about this somewhere. And I think she was probably on the verge of suggesting I come to AA or go to some kind of counseling or something like that. But she never did really pull the trigger on that. Anyway, I went through the 12 weeks, and I'll tell you, I didn't pay any attention to any, I no more thought of myself the alcoholic than the man in the moon, although I was, drinking alcoholically by that time. Something I heard in an AA meeting, and actually this is a part of the meeting that's the coffee pot part of the meeting. So I'm hanging around at the coffee pot pretty early on in sobriety, maybe 30 or 60 days, something like that. And this guy made this comment. He said, Jack, you know, the longer I'm here, the further back, we all talk about a line where we cross into alcoholic drinking. And, the longer I'm here, the further back I see in my drinking that line. And when I heard him say that, I started kind of connecting dots, and I'm thinking, I can really see where my drinking was abnormal all the way back to high school. I was a standout guy, first one to throw up in my group and all this, that, and the other. Whatever. The line going back. So anyway, I go to going to this DUI class, the 12 weeks of information, 12 hours, so on and so forth. None of it stuck to me except for one thing. They were talking about the signs and symptoms of alcoholism, and they went through them, and I couldn't really tell you what they were, but she wound up saying this one thing, and that was, if you ever see these things in yourself, an aspect of alcoholism, they'll always get worse, they'll never get better, and they're irreversible. And again, that information why that stuck to me, it's one of those things. Because I wasn't thinking of myself as a problem drinker at the time. But I go on from there. For the next year after that DUI school, I didn't drink and drive anymore. But I moved. I moved because I had a great party house out in the country where we could do anything we wanted to and nobody's going to bother us. It was just a prize of a joint. I left that and moved over into an inner city little dive-in apartment so I could walk to my bar. I did. So I was very adamant, no drinking and driving for a year or so. The second year after the DUI was a little more of, okay, let's do like they talked about in the first part of that class. Okay, we can drive and drink a little bit, but let's keep it under the radar. Don't drink more than 2 an hour, things like that. And it did pretty good like that. In the meantime, I had an incident or two where one night I fell down a flight of stairs and broke an arm. And busted up a cheek. And the next week, one of the guys that I was acquainted with did something similar like that, fell down a flight of steps, and it killed him. And I thought, gee whiz, it's a fun out here party. We're having a good time, So I'm drinking and driving a little bit more, and it's the third year after the DUI. Now I'm having an accident or two, and every car that I drove, just about all four corners of, had some kind of ding or dinger on them and stuff like that. And I was, I'd go to a Fiddler's convention on a Saturday night, and the police would take exception to the way I was acting. They want to take me down, talk to me or something like that, and I talked back to them, and I wound up in jail with a broken arm. And things like that started happening like every, they were once a year, and they would, I would write them up as the kind of thing that happened to good old boys having a good time, and then they would happen twice a year, and then they would happen every six weeks or so. And then it was every six times I drank. It never got to be every time that I drank, but there was a 4 or 5 year period between that and my second DUI. And let me say real quickly, for time's sake, I got I wanted nothing to do with any marriage or anything like that after that breakup. But after a couple, two or three years, I ran into a girl. A girl ran into me. We were both party animals, and we partied together, and she's my current wife. And we got married and had a child. And I just about lost that child. The child was born preemie, and she has medical troubles today. But while she was in the hospital at her in neonatal care, I went down there stumbling drunk while my wife was over in the other hospital where she had given birth and couldn't come. So I was a representative parent for the initial intake and stuff like that. And at 7 o'clock in the morning, I had a bottle in the car. The baby was born about 4 a.m. She had to be rushed to neonatal in another place. I had a bottle in the car and drank it on the way over there. And I was there, and that was the shape I was in at 7 o'clock in the morning when I gave the parent interview at the neonatal place. And the next day, the social workers were calling my wife and asking if, or calling on her, asking her if Mr. Scott was okay under all this stress and did he need any help or anything like that. Well, I kind of lost my girlfriend, party girl wife at that point as far as being a party girl anymore. She kind of, her radar was up about, there's something about motherhood and sensitivity and things like that. So we went from party couple to she was defensive and on guard about me and things like that. And so the drinking kept going. And so the last year that I drank, it was pretty much like in that safe harbor of story this morning, there's a line that says the inevitable was going to happen. And I drank that last year knowing the inevitable was going to happen, that something bad was, I was either going to wake up in jail dead, or I was going to wake up in jail with a felony slip and not know how I got it. I'll just throw in, I was bad for blackouts and stuff like that too. And all these things, I knowing that I'm the control was gone. I feel like the Jekyll and Hyde guy. When I saw Jekyll and Hyde in the Big Book, I felt like my personality was Jekyll and Hyde. Like I was no longer the party boy guy. I was picking fights and smart mouth and so on. I was losing friends and I could see all this. I had what I call an out of body experience one night while I was sitting in a bar. It was 4 p.m. I started drinking. And my mouth just started running. It just, to this person and that person, and it's just all a bunch of BS and a bunch of stuff. And it's like I stepped away from myself and said, Jack, just shut up, man. You know, just shut up. And I didn't, you know, and I just kept on going. I felt in something, but I never went on the wagon or tried to quit. I just was going to wait till. What happened. And what happened to me was a second DUI. That second wife with the second child left, and nobody was there to get me out of jail that last morning. And I like had a 3-hour walk back home. And this was in April of 1982, April 28th. And so I had a 3-hour walk home on a Saturday morning, and I had some self-talk, and that was, I got no control. If I go out drinking tonight, I got no control over not getting a third DUI, you know, if I go out drinking again. And a third DUI then was an automatic year in jail, and I'm sure it is now and worse, but anyway. So I white-knuckled sober, and I haven't had a drink since April 28, 1982. I did not run off to AA. Both my parents are in AA by this time. I'm 29 years old. I didn't want to come to AA. My thinking about what drinking was, you know, I'm an alcoholic. Let me go to 50. I'll turn myself in, and then, you know, let me have my fun. And 50 is a good place to come to AA, not 29. And but yeah. You know, circumstances were what was circumstances. So anyway, I white knuckled it. Anyway, so my court date started getting coming up, and it was the first of July, and my company has an employee assistance program, and I went to that employee assistance program to get some counseling, and so I could have something to take with me to court that I was doing something about. And that I wasn't drinking. And So I go in and talk to this guy, and you know, there's a generation gap between me and this guy. We are no more like, the way I describe him to in settings like this is, I used to drink in a bar that had 10 stools, and sometimes I go into that bar and it was kind of quiet and dingy, and there wasn't a lot going on because I'd be in there all hours. But anyway, very often just be one or two people in there. If that guy had been the other guy in there, I would have gone clean to the other end of the bar. He'd be the last person I'd ever sat with and talked to or anything like that if we were drinking. But we sat in there for an hour, hour and a half together in his office to talk about my problems and what I was with. And he told me about himself, and he summarized it at the end of the hour and a half. He says, I can't help you, but I can take you where I get help. And he said, I'll meet you on Tuesday night at such and such church, and I'll take you to an AA meet. And I thought, well, shit,
sorry.
I apologize. Anyway, this guy did take me to a meeting, and he took me to a meeting he was familiar with, and he introduced me to people, and it was other people that kind of took me under their wing, and they made me feel welcome, and I've been staying ever since, reluctantly at first. But what the real service that guy did for me, and I appreciate today, is that he did something with what we call today bridging the gap. He took me from a counseling office to an AA meeting. He kind of hand-delivered me. He made sure I got in the door and that I got connected to the right people and things like that. And I knew him on the outside, and he got me into the inside, and rather than just dump me that was a big service and a big deal to me. And I didn't want to be there, and I didn't want to be part of this. And you know, I walked into a room, it was a speaker meeting just like this, and it was twice as many people, it was a twice as size of room, there was twice as much smoke, I might say, back in 1982. I said to myself, first walking across the parking lot, I said, I don't want to be here, but why don't I give it a little bit of a listen, because you've seen your folks and you sure are in a jam. I had the mustard seed of willingness. I had just the mustard seed of knowing that I had, you know, a little bit of alcoholism. and then that was a little bit of self-talk. But I walked into the room, there's all these people, and across the room is the biggest, tallest, ugliest man I've ever seen in my life. And I thought, God, I don't want to be here. And if I don't want anything to do with these people, and if I had anything to do with any of them, he'd be the last one. And so he was the speaker that night. His name is Jerry Paxton. He wound up being a big player in the Virginia Area Committee, and he was the corrections chair in his time. He was a DCM when I got to know him. But anyway, he was the speaker that night, and he had legal troubles and things like that. And I get short on time, I will say that, you know, he said things that I could relate to, that I knew that he'd been around the bases, just like that man in the office had been around the bases. So just one incremental person at a time let me know that it was, you know, this wasn't as bad a thing as I thought it was. And so I was told in my first or second meeting to make a big book study meeting part of my weekly routine, and it happened that this meeting that Jimmy took me to was such a meeting, a big book study. And so I sat in with them, and lo and behold, I started hearing the big book read and talked about and things like that. And long story short, I got an education on alcoholism. I guess I got there at the right time of the book, where they were talking about what all the business in the second, third chapter about Jim's story and Fred's story and the Jay Walker and all those things. And there will be a time and a place where you will rationalize that it's okay, you won't be able to defend yourself, the ABCs type thing. And something like that happened to me. I hung around the Fellowship of AA. I began to like that group. They liked me. They told funny jokes. They were good personal people, and so on and so forth. And for about 6 months, I was there pretty regularly. But we had the shades at that meeting, and I could see those shades. And it was talking about God restoring you to sanity. And I might be a little bit too much, but I'm not crazy, is what I was thinking. And then there was the turn your life and your will over to the care of God part. And I brought old ideas about God. Well, I'll just quickly say that, you know, that just like it says in the literature, and I guess we all have that. And so I didn't want to do any of that part. I didn't want to do any of the step part, but I liked fellowship and hung around. And so, long story short, 6 months after getting through 6 months worth of holidays, including Thanksgiving, Christmas, so on and so forth, it came around to New Year's. And I got through New Year's Eve. New Year's Eve, my big party night. You know, that's the bigger one of the big ones. And I got through that. And so it's New Year's Day, and I'm over at an old, I went around old people places and things, where you're not supposed to go, for just rationalize that was okay. And I did another substance. It was offered to me, and in the blink of an eye, I rationalized. And in 6 months of AA, I've been intellectually schooled that you can't stay away from it. And I'm, by this time, I'm thoroughly 101 down to my toenails convinced I'm alcoholic, and I don't want to do anything to go back slipping back in that. And I know other things, other behaviors or other chemicals or anything like that can lead back to that. I understand it, and I did it anyway. So that process of rationalization, the inability to remember the consequences of a day, a week, a year ago, all those things happened in about 5 seconds, and it really caught my attention. So much so, I'm lucky. I walked away from it kind of scared straight. Got out in the car and drove under the influence. But I went to a meeting that night, and I fessed up to what I'd done, and I went over to the man that was my sponsor and told him what I was with. I got it out in the open. And they, you know, accepted me back and said, you know, this is, but what